really great to have you here today. As you know, we've invited you here to talk about employee engagement. And throughout this session, I'd really like to help people understand what actually is employee engagement, how can they achieve it, and why should they achieve it. And during the session, we can pick up some things, you know, around technology, tips and tricks, gotchas, things that we want people to avoid. And finally, it would be great to cover off why it's so important. But before we do that, let's have you introduce yourself.
Yeah, I'm a psychologist, workplace psychology mostly. I initially went to University of British Columbia in Vancouver, and my dissertation topic was actually on communication and work engagement in a medical setting, so I've been preparing for this for a while. I came to London about 8 years ago, and I went to University College London, where my research was on personality psychology, and especially the psychology and personality of successful and effective leadership. So my focus has been mainly around kind of leadership and workplace psychology. I just wrote the book with Kogan Page about a year ago called Myths of Work, which was a fun one to do because I got to kind of delve into the different myths and misconceptions and ideas, sometimes ideas that weren't correct about the workplace, about millennials and engagement and job satisfaction and having ping pong tables in the office, whether it's good or bad. So it was an interesting one to write because you can take that kind of fun approach to the different myths.
So I loved the book. I agree with you, there was lots of fun in there, there was lots of elements that made me smile, and I'd love to come back to explore some of that a little bit later. Before we start though, perhaps you could give us your definition of employee engagement.
Employee engagement is essentially a positive state of well-being in the workplace. So it's feeling kind of passionate and really part of putting yourself into the work. And most importantly, it is that kind of positive state of well-being in the workplace. So it's essentially the opposite of employee burnout.
So that sounds as though the onus is on the employee to achieve engagement, is that right?
It's kind of a mutual responsibility. So, I mean, realistically, for any employee, it is, if they want to be engaged, it is up to them to put their effort and kind of their skills, their experience into the work they do, and to do the best they can to be engaged. But it's very difficult to be engaged if you work in a kind of toxic or difficult workplace. So the employers, the leaders in the company also have a huge responsibility if they want people to be engaged and if they want people to be productive to create that atmosphere and culture where people are given enough independence and autonomy where they can do their job in their own way, they can use and make the most of their own skills and abilities, and where they're given the trust and flexibility to be able to do that. And I mean, realistically, like, we're managing adults. Like, people can manage their own schedules. People can figure out when they work best. And people have families and friends and personal lives and hobbies and all sorts of other things that they want to do. So making work fit into that is most useful when people can do it in the way that they're going to work best.
So you may be surprised to know, or you may already know this, that in the UK, 51% of us are disengaged and have been for some time. I think that's actually quite alarming. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, that's a huge number. I mean, I don't find it hugely surprising. I find it slightly discouraging, but that's one of those room for improvement areas, right? So if there's 51% of people, then I still have a lot more work. So there's a lot more that we can do to make more workplaces more engaging, better places to work, better for employees. And the company, like if a company finds that their employees are disengaged, then that's a huge opportunity to say that we can improve engagement, we can improve productivity, we can make this a better place to work where people are going to work better.
Okay. So a number of, you know, I have lots of friends who work in all sorts of different organizations across the public sector place and also from a commercial standpoint. And time again, I see them needing to be in a physical location at 9 o'clock. And from their perspective, they finish work at 5 o'clock. I find that quite surprising, actually, because I work in an organisation where I have the autonomy to work at the times that suit me, so long as I get my job done, of course. Do you think there is still a lot of organisations that dictate that 9-to-5 culture?
There are a lot, and there's quite a few that do when they don't need to. I mean, obviously, if you work in a hospital and you're a nurse, you can't telecommute. It's not going to work. If you are a submarine commander, you also can't, you know, take a day off or work from home or take the dog for a walk. But for most organizations, if there's any organization where it's outcome-based, where you have a deliverable, you have a goal, you have a deadline. You don't necessarily need to be in a physical space to do it. So there are lots of organizations that are moving towards more flexible schedules that accommodate people's lives and needs and kind of personal flexibility, which is good because you want people to be working when they're most effective, when they want to be working and when they're going to be working the hardest and kind of putting the most they can into that. So the more employers can do to facilitate that, the more useful it will be for both employers and for the outcomes. The other thing is you do need some oversight, right? So you need to have some structure in place to make sure that there is a clear line of accountability. People know what they have to do, what the outcomes are, what the rewards are for doing it well in their own time, however they do it, and what the potential consequences are. The same is true for a 9-to-5 environment. But I think there is a lot more opportunity to make more work more flexible and more engaging.
So at Microsoft, we believe that technology supports employee engagement. It really helps to drive that, helps bring people together. Can you give us an example of an organization that you've worked with where you've seen them use technology to help drive employee engagement?
Yeah, I've got a really good example in the Myths of Work book, actually, of an organization. I think it's about 30 years old now. They're a tax and kind of accountancy firm, so professional services. So they're highly skilled, highly paid, kind of highly in demand professionals. This company, over their first 20 years, massively grew, started in the US, is now international, and were making lots of money, expanding quite quickly, doing very well. But about 10 years ago, they kind of hit a barrier in how much they could grow and how much they could expand because they had huge problems with disengagement, burnout, really high turnover, and a culture of presenteeism. So the standard was people working about 50 hours a week, which is quite a bit, and not always the most effective if people have to be in the office, you know, 10 hours a day, 5 hours a week, and are expected to be, especially when the culture is like that. So they did something which is really impressive and noticed that, I mean, 10 years ago when engagement was less of a hot topic, and said, we need to do something about this. And really, the way that they could change that and move to flexible schedules was with technology. So the good thing about that kind of work is it's really easy to measure deliverables, what clients you've worked with, what your kind of performance targets are, financial targets. You can measure all of that, and none of it depends on how much you're in the office. Your client service doesn't necessarily mean you need to be in the office or in 2 hours of meetings every single day. So they went through that change that was supported by the upper level management, senior management, which is really important because you can bring in a program, but if management doesn't believe in it, it's never really going to be effective. So I think that's a good example where it was a cultural change that needed the technology to make it possible.
That's a great example. Thank you very much for sharing. And I think what we would like people to be thinking about when they're thinking about employee engagement is the how. Yeah. How are they going to actually achieve Nirvana, and what does Nirvana look like for them? And you know, technology needs to wrap itself around that, but it needs to not be the thing that's driving towards it. So in your book, there's lots of different myths. I think there's about 40 of them or something. I had a couple that stood out to me as resonating and being particular favorites. What's your favorite myth in the book?
I thought my favorite, because it's the most interesting and one of my pet peeves really, was the myth about kind of millennials are changing the workplace, or millennials are motivated by different things, or, you know, the generational differences kind of myth. And as an entitled narcissistic millennial, that really offended me. So one of the things I went through in that chapter is looking at kind of the generational difference myths and the evidence around it, because there's actually been a huge amount of scientific research, both from the US and the UK, hundreds of thousands of people examining generational age differences. And the research really finds there's no difference. So all of the variation is within any group. So millennials vary as widely within them as any different other generation, whether it's, you know, Gen X, Gen Y, baby boomers, whatever they are, which is really interesting from kind of a management and engagement perspective, is because if you use those kind of lazy stereotypes about broad groups, you're not going to manage people effectively because you're going to get it wrong about most people. So I think that's another point that really brings it back to engagement, is being able to manage people as individuals and giving supervisors and team leaders and managers the autonomy to manage the people around them, and giving people the independence to work in the way that they work best, most effectively within that environment and within that structure and framework.
That's a really interesting point, particularly as we've now got five generations in many organizations working alongside one another. So it's actually very interesting to hear that from a science perspective. Actually, the variations occur within the different groups, not across the different groups. And that's a really good point. So we've talked a little bit about what is employee engagement. We've talked about, you know, some areas that you feel very strongly about. And it's great that you've brought up the millennial point, as I think, you know, there is some bad press, perhaps. Yep. One of the things that I would love to understand is some tips, if we could. So I think we've all had times in our careers when we felt disengaged for whatever reason. I can absolutely remember that's one that stands out in my mind and will probably take to my grave with me. What's a tip that you could give to an employee that's feeling really disengaged? You know, should they just go and leave their job? Or is there things that they could do within their role that could really help them to feel more motivated, less disgruntled?
Yeah, I mean, a big part of engagement is finding that meaning that you get from your work and what you can really put into your work. So, I mean, to be perfectly honest, I've worked jobs before where there's not a lot of meaning I could have put into it. So it's challenging depending on what type of work you do, what company you're at, what the culture is like. So I think the first thing is really looking at what you can do better in the company, in the way you work, or even if it's one or two people that you work with and work well together, you know, working together on something that can really improve the output or your work or the way you work is important. And it depends a lot on your management or leadership. I mean, can you go to them and say, I want to do more, I want to make this better, and will they listen to that? If they don't, if you work in a culture where no one's interested in you, you kind of have to do your own thing and you're not going to get any support or help or anyone trying to make it a better workplace, then it's going to be a struggle. So I think if all of those options are failed, maybe look for a place that is more engaging, that is using the technology to kind of build a better workplace, that is more flexible.
And that takes me on to my next point, really. So I think so far we've spent some time sort of really exploring this as a subject. You've just talked about leaving an organization. Now, ultimately, the cost of attaining an employee is really, really hard. So surely there should be onus on the organization to create an environment where people want to work. On the back of your book, you talk about ping pong tables and slides and ball pits and various other things. Does that really create an engaging workplace?
I don't think it does. It wouldn't for me. I mean, if you really loved ping pong, then I guess it would just be a distraction. But I think it comes from a good place sometimes. So I think there are companies who are trying to make workplaces better, more engaging, more motivating for people to come to. I think sometimes it's well-meaning, but it misses the mark a bit. So if you really want to come to work to put the best part of yourself, you know, what you can do into your job to make your product or your client better or whatever you're doing, then I don't know if a ping pong table or a ball pit is going to do that. So I think the focus needs to be on making kind of the work and the outcome of the work more engaging and to really having a kind of culture that imbues value and meaning into the work that you do. I think that's going to be a lot more engaging than some of the other kind of superficial stuff. If it comes with a culture that is really trying to support that and there's a few other little kind of perks and bonuses that are fun, then maybe that works for some people. But I think the focus really needs to be on the work and on the employee and how to make that better and more engaging.
And much more fundamental than the facilities that are provided within an office environment.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's all sorts of basic facilities that can make things a little easier. Like it's nice to have a good lunch on site or, you know, have lunch tokens or to get, you know, perks and benefits and health insurance. And all of that stuff is those kind of extrinsic motivators are going to reduce some of the stress, kind of can mitigate some of the negative effects, but that only gets you to a mid-level. That doesn't get you to the more kind of the higher level of actual engagement and kind of meaning and getting that from your work. Yeah.
Sure. Okay. So organizations typically are looking to achieve their business goals or their objectives or to increase their share price, that they'll have some kind of goal or vision, regardless of what type of organization they are. How does employee engagement support those things from a financial standpoint?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that because, I mean, really sometimes engagement is seen as a bit of a fluffy thing or kind of, you know, happiness, you know, lovely, cuddly kind of thing. But there is a really strong business argument for it. So in the most basic sense, if work engagement is well-being and we can measure that psychologically, it's going to reduce sick days and it's going to reduce stress, which is a big one because it's not just reducing sick days by making sure people show up and having a culture of presenteeism. It's making people better in that sense, more psychologically well at work, which affects their personal life as well. So that's one of them. I mean, that's better for people and it's better for companies. It also massively reduces turnover and tension. Because if you love your job, you're engaged, every time you come to work, you're full of energy, you want to do it, you're vigorous, engaged, absorbed in it, then you're much less likely to leave that job if you love it, right? So that also massively reduces turnover costs. So retention is really important and hugely valuable. So there are some really kind of clear financial bottom line outcomes that we can use to look at this as well.
Okay. So before we close, if I could be so bold as to ask you to summarize three key points that you want people to remember about today, what would they be?
I think first, engagement. If you want to have a program or a process that improves engagement, it does need to be supported by senior management and it needs to be embraced as part of a culture. So if you have it kind of written on the wall on your mission, vision, values, but no one actually lives by it or cares about it, it's never going to filter down or across to the rest of the organization. And in a way, that'll just make people more cynical. So if you're going to have these programs, you know, used with technology or anything else, you really need to make sure it's supported as part of the company culture. The other thing, we do need to remember that there is some personal responsibility in engagement, is that you can't engage someone who doesn't want to be engaged. So you do have to do your best to, you know, find a job that you are going to be able to put yourself into, that you really want to be spending time at, and to make the best of it. Because we all have days at work where we aren't necessarily doing exactly what we want to be doing or how we want to be doing it. But look at the bigger picture and what you can actually do overall. I think those are two main ones. And then if we tie it in the middle, it needs to be able to filter down. So you need to give people autonomy and independence. So frontline managers need the independence to be able to manage people and work with their team in a way that works at that site or at that location or with those specific people. So that kind of autonomy and independence needs to be all across the company.
This has been a really enlightening conversation. I've really enjoyed it. And from my perspective, one of the things that has stood out loudly and clearly is employee engagement can't be achieved by one individual. It has to be created in partnership with the individual involved, the manager, and the organization. So it's a tripart agreement, if you like.
Absolutely.
And the other thing that's really stood out to me is employees have to be able to connect with that vision. And they have to be able to connect that vision with what's fundamentally important to them in their personal lives. I think that's kind of come across quite loudly and clearly to me. So I've now got a really good view of how we can achieve employee engagement. So thank you ever so much for spending some time with us today.
Great. Thanks for having me.